1059 FM,
the Fan.
And Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Welcome back to the program. Lori Rubenson here with you. And the Mets, they lose on Sunday to the Cardinals. It seems winning a series in St. Louis remains elusive for the Mets. But Pete Alonso with another home run, a bomb on Sunday. To talk about the Mets and the Polar Bear, we bring in Tim Healy from Newsday. Hey, Tim, how are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. How are you?
Good. By the way, great coverage on Pete Alonso, and I really enjoyed your story, the one on his family and all the. Apparently, there are multiple Peter Alonzos in the family.
Yes, five Peter Alonzos, all with different middle names, and now three of them with ties to Queens. So, anybody interested in that story can check out my pinned tweet on Twitter if they want.
Yeah, if you haven't, and that was a question I was going to ask you, is that, you know, in all the years that you've covered sports, where does Pete the Polar Bear Alonzo rank in terms of fun athletes to cover?
Honestly, he's right up there. You know, when I think about the guys who really stick out, Jose Fernandez is up there. Brandon Nimmo, when he broke out, is up there. And Pete Alonzo is right up there with both of those guys. He's obviously on the field, perhaps the Mets' best hitter. You know, 8 home runs, 19 RBIs, leads the team in both of those categories. But even off the field, you know, as a reporter, you don't really want to have to go to the same guy every day because you don't want to wear him out. You want to change things up. But with Pete Alonso, these last couple of weeks, it feels like every day or every other day he's doing something noteworthy where, you know, as a reporter, you don't have a choice but to go ask him about it. And he's handled all of that very well. He's you know, very friendly, very charismatic, as I think comes across on the cameras and in the quotes in our stories. But yeah, he's a fun player to watch, that's for sure.
Yeah, and the legend certainly on the field grows with the long home runs, but also the all-around hitting and the effervescence, the way he plays. But also the legend kind of grow off the field with the stories and some of the stories behind them. So for people who missed it, can you give the backstory on today's Pete Alonso home run and being in the lineup today?
Sure, sure. So yesterday, Saturday afternoon, he gets hit by a pitch on the hand. X-rays are negative, but apparently it was lingering in his mind into Saturday night because he texted Mickey Callaway, he called Mickey Callaway. Mickey Callaway was out to dinner with his parents in St. Louis. They were in town this weekend for the series. So eventually Mickey and Pete Alonso run into each other at the team hotel, and Pete tells Mickey, you know, my hand's fine. I really want to play tomorrow. I know the pitcher, Dakota Hudson from college. You know, Alonso went to University of Florida. Dakota Hudson of the Cardinals went to Mississippi State, so they had some history. So, you know, Mickey relays the story this morning, and, you know, to hear Mickey tell it, it sounded like there was a little animosity or Pete wanted a little revenge for something. We didn't know what. So he's in the lineup, first inning, second pitch of his at-bat. He hits a ball at 450 feet or so. it's just the sort of stuff that you can't make up. You know, it's the sort of thing where, you know, you say to yourself, oh, it'd be pretty funny if Pete Alonso actually hit a home run here off Hudson. And then next thing you know, there it goes. Dexter Fowler in center field doesn't even bother really chasing it down. That's how far it was over the wall. But, just like you said, just another day, another wild thing from Pete Alonso.
Yeah, I think for all of us, for those of you, you know, for people like you, Tim, who cover the team every day, for fans who watch all the time, those of us, you know, on radio, I think the challenge will be, how do we not take this guy in his rookie year for granted and the joy of it? Because I think sometimes it's easy to get numb to, like, oh, yeah, there's another home run. But what he's doing as a rookie, you know, this is just a really fun season and something that we should all, you know, just make sure that you enjoy the ride. All right, so flipping off of that, today's game. So the Mets, you know, not only did the Mets lose, but let's start with Noah Syndergaard. The starting pitching was supposed to be the team's strength, and, you know, if we look at it across the board, starters have been disappointing, and maybe no one more so than Noah Syndergaard. What's going on with Thor?
He's not quite sure, it sounds like. After his start today against the Cardinals, only 5 innings, 6 runs and 4 earned, Talking after his start, he sounded, frankly, kind of lost. He said he hadn't really been in this healthy and ineffective at the same time since 2014 when he was in AAA. And I remember at the time then he admitted that, you know, when he was in AAA, he was spending a little too much time on social media waiting for that call-up to the major leagues. Now, he doesn't have that problem now. He just hasn't been very good. Today he walked a couple guys to start innings. Both of those runners came around to score. And yeah, you're right. The rotation was supposed to be a strength of this team. It has not been for the first 3.5 weeks. Obviously, it should get better. It's pretty reasonable to think that it is going to get better. But they can't be waiting around too long. I mean, Noah Syndergaard is a great example. It feels like it's been 3 or 4 years. People have been waiting for Syndergaard to put it all together and really be that breakout Cy Young pick, and that just hasn't happened yet. He says things like trying to repeat his delivery, execute pitches, things like that, and you know, to the common fan, I don't think that has a lot of meaning, especially when it's the answer over and over. But after the game today, Syndergaard was very very hard on himself, and I think appropriately so, about how his 5.9 ERA isn't acceptable and it has to get better, and he said it will, and it's easy to believe him. It's just a matter of when.
Is there something to, you know, as the game has gotten more reliant on bullpens and a lot of these bullpen arms, you know, guys come in, power arms, only going to pitch a few innings, that 98-mile-an-hour fastball doesn't intimidate hitters as much as it used to because there's a greater frequency of seeing that?
Absolutely. I think that's a good point. You know, it used to be when you had a starter, especially when it was a starter, coming in throwing high 90s, that was, you know, not quite unheard of, but very, very rare. Now, the Mets in particular have guys, you know, four of their five, everybody except Jason Vargas in the rotation, sits mid to high 90s like it's nothing. Mm-hmm. Then you see a guy like Jordan Hicks of the Cardinals come in for the save today, and poor Juan Lagares gets thrown in late in the game, and he gets a 104-mile-an-hour sinker, painted it on the outside corner. That's just impossible. You know what I mean? Hitting a baseball is hard enough as it is without guys throwing 104. But yeah, that's a good point. It's interesting that you can take two guys who throw hard, say DeGrom and Syndergaard, and their velocity will play differently based on how the ball moves, where their arm angle's at. Mickey Callaway was talking today about how when DeGrom releases the ball, he's much closer to the plate than Syndergaard, just the way his mechanics and delivery are. And for DeGrom, that works. For Syndergaard, less so. You know, if it's straight, if it's 98 miles an hour, but straight, guys will be able to hit it.
Yeah, I thought that was actually really interesting, Mickey's postgame presser, when he was talking pitching and talking about those two guys and high fastball and both of those in location. Talking to Tim Healy from Newsday about the Mets, and you mentioned poor Juan Lagares who got thrown in there.
Yeah.
So poor Juan Lagares was in there because of a very strange turn of events. Robinson Cano up at the plate gets hit in the hand. It seems very obviously he's supposed to be standing on first base, but he's injured and coming out of the game, Lagares in, and yet the third base umpire calls that play a swinging strike, and Mickey Callaway gets thrown out of the game. From your perspective in, you know, being there in the stadium, other, you know, writers in the press box or talking to people, what was, I can see what it looks like on camera at home, but that to me, that just looked like a crazy play. I didn't understand how the Mets didn't get a runner on first base there.
Yeah, it was a weird one, that's for sure. It was weird in the moment. It was weird on replay. It was weird after hearing comments from everybody. The third base ump, you mentioned Paul Emil. He was the crew chief and the one who overturned it. It was initially ruled a hit by pitch by the home plate umpire. But as Cano was tended to by Mickey Callaway and the Mets athletic trainer, the umps talked it over, and the crew chief, Paul Emil at third base, overturned it and called it a swinging strike. And Mickey Callaway obviously was furious. I think part of that stemmed from the Mets having a similar sequence with Pete Alonso Saturday. He got hit in the hand. It was ruled a swing, and thus he did not get first base. But yeah, it's a weird play to begin with, and then to have a similar one 2 days in a row, very strange. But Paul Emel was convinced absolutely that he had made the right call. He said it was not a judgment call or an interpretation. It was black and white that Cano swung. Cano, on the other hand, was convinced that he did not swing, but only one of those guys gets to make the decision.
Yeah. All right, so the Mets are now going to have a big series coming up, playing, you know, they come home and face the Phillies. What's the latest in terms of Robinson Cano? Do you expect him to be in the lineup tomorrow?
I don't think he'll be in the lineup tomorrow, just based on how he was talking today. X-rays were negative, which is always good news, but after the game he did have a cast on. He said he might need more testing tomorrow, depending on how he feels when he wakes up. So you have to see how the swelling and all that goes. They had him on some anti-inflammatories, which is standard. But, you know, I don't need to remind Mets fans that last year, of course, Jason Vargas and then Kevin Pilecki both thought they got off easy when their x-rays were negative on their hands, only for later images to reveal fractures. So Cano's not quite out of the woods yet. The early prognosis was good, but you have to see what happens in the next, you know, 12 to 24 hours.
Speaking of testing and not out of the woods, to MRI or not to MRI, that is the question. And of course, we're talking about Jacob DeGrom. And so what's the latest on DeGrom, and is he getting an MRI, and do you think he should be getting an MRI?
The latest as of today was DeGrom will see the team doctor on Monday in New York. And he will probably not get an MRI, but they will defer to the doctor, Dr. David Altchek, to see if Altchek thinks DeGrom needs an MRI. But, yeah, as you alluded to, this is a very strange episode for the Mets over the weekend, starting with DeGrom having a barking elbow, as Mickey Callaway put it, to him going on the injured list and going to New York and then not going to New York and staying with the team. He was going to get an MRI Monday, and now he's not going to get an MRI Monday, but he still might. So it's very strangely handled. You know, it was a very fluid situation on Friday in particular, but absolutely, I think about it this way. You just signed the guy to a five-year, $137 million, mm-hmm. $137.5 million contract.
Yep.
If you think he's fine, great. Like, you know, he probably is fine, but if he was sore enough the other day for you to put him on the DL for one start,
yep,
you can probably swing whatever an MRI costs just for peace of mind or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's not a cost issue here, that it is one of those things where they're trying not to sort of over, you know, quote unquote, sort of over treat or whatever it is. But I'm with you. Barking elbow, if his elbow was even growling, if I'm the Mets, especially after last year and the whole Thor stupid, you know, issue and all of that they had, you got to be kidding me. I don't understand. If I'm the Mets from a communication standpoint, I'm getting him into that tube and giving him the MRI. So anyway, let me ask you also, though, about Ahmed Rosario and his defense. A couple errors in the game.
Yeah.
Any concerns about Rosario? I mean, at his best, he's a very good defensive player, but what's going on right now?
Well, it is a weird situation, and Mickey Callaway was asked about it today after the game, and Callaway did not express any concern, which is, you know,
of
he
course,
hasn't
he's not going to, but yeah.
He hasn't expressed concern about anything so
right.
far this season, even though there are a number of concerning things with the Mets. But, yeah, so it's a weird look for Rosario. You know, with the defense and with the batting, he has all the tools in the world,
yep,
but just hasn't been able to put it together yet. And he's still only 23. You know, there's no reason to be anywhere close to giving up on the guy. But I think a lot of people, kind of like Syndergaard, are just waiting for him to turn the talent into actual on-field production. With the case of his defense, you know, five errors the past five games, it's got the added strange dynamic of the Mets not having a backup shortstop right now.
Yeah.
They sent down Luis Guillorme a week ago, so Ahmed Rosario, who's playing almost every inning prior to that, has played every inning since then, and really doesn't have a choice when it comes to a potential day off. The Mets say they can put Jeff McNeil at shortstop in an emergency if they need to, if Rosario needed to leave the game. But They're not going to start him at shortstop. So it's Rosario just kind of has to tough it out right now. They're not going to have a shortstop this week, you know, barring a change of plans. But,
Unfortunately, Tim, our time is up because I did want to have a little therapy session on my anxiety with Todd Frazier coming back and what that's going to do for Jeff McNeil. But
yeah,
our time is up, so I guess I'm going to have to deal with that the best way I know how, which is on talk radio and let our callers talk me down.
That sounds
like
a good plan.
All right, Tim Healy from Newsday, appreciate the time. Safe travels.
Thank you very much.